Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Kendall, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through a generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The title of today's forum is U.S.-Peru Relations. Today's guest is His Excellency Harold Forsyth. Before arriving in Washington, he served in China, Italy, Turkey, Chile, Germany, and Colombia. Ambassador Forsyth studied journalism at Pontifical Catholic University of Peru and international relations and diplomacy at the Diplomatic Academy of Peru. He has received a dozen decorations for his diplomatic work. Please join me in welcoming our guest.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I'm very lucky to have the chance to share a few moments with you, with this very prestigious Hinckley Institute for Politics in this also very prestigious University of Utah. You're very lucky to have the chance to study in this type of institution, which is very well known not only in the United States but also in the world. So I'm very glad that in my official visit to Utah, I have the chance to share this time with you. So I will tell you a few things about Peru, about our relations with the United States, and then we can engage in a dialogue, if it is possible. The United States established diplomatic relations with Peru in 1826, following Peru's independence from Spain. Freedom of commerce and the protection of foreign investments were the main concerns at that time. After the War of the Pacific, when Peru lost two of its richest provinces, Peruvian foreign policy focused on two interrelated issues: the resolution of our territorial disputes with Chile, Colombia, and Ecuador, and the reconciliation of an expanding and deepening relations with the United States government. A lot of water has passed under the bridge, and now, in the 21st century, almost 200 years later, our partnership has endured and has strengthened. Peru and the United States promote respect for human rights, as well as a broad support for democracy and the rule of law, as part of our fundamental values and traditions. The strengthening of good governance and social inclusion through economic growth based on free trade and open markets are two basic components of our common vision in the world. In addition, both countries have embarked on a stronger cooperation against terrorism, nuclear proliferation, transnational crime, and other international threats to our peace and security in the Western Hemisphere. As you may know, Peruvian democracy continues to strengthen. After the authoritarian regime in the 90s, Peru experienced during the last two decades a tremendous restoration of confidence in the democratic system and values. Within this framework, our country has had three consecutive fair and uncontested presidential elections in 2001, 2006, and 2011. Economically, Peru has begun to reap the benefits of growth and stability, open trade, and responsible fiscal and monetary policies. Our macroeconomic indicators are among the best in the region and even in the world. Two decades of pro-growth macroeconomic policy in Peru have yielded unprecedented economic expansion, only comparable to those seen in Asia, low inflation, investment-grade stages for the country's debt, and a drop in poverty rates. Despite this positive outlook, many challenges remain. More than a quarter of the population continues to live in poverty. Illegal coca growth and cocaine production are on the rise, and social conflicts over natural resources and how to achieve social inclusive and environmentally responsible growth pose serious challenges to our country. child malnutrition in several rural areas is still very high. Paradoxically, near the major mining centers, gas or oil camps, and the major tourist attractions, people still lack access to basic services like electricity, clean water, housing, health, education, and roads. Open inequality has been accompanied by a feeling of discrimination extended across important sectors of our population that feel they are not being represented by the system, that they are not being heard by the institutions that should be channeling and processing their complaints, problems, and aspirations. These populations perceive themselves as second-class citizens in their own country. It was not sustainable to continue with a model that tolerated economic growth with high levels of poverty and continue business as usual in the way of doing politics. On July 28, 2011, President Ollanta Humala took office with a specific mandate from the Peruvian people to carry out a fundamental reform incorporating, as a priority, the need to achieve social inclusion. He must achieve this important challenge based on a pragmatic approach, without breaking the positive achievements occurred in the last 10 years, and without assuming any ideological alignments. The Humala administration's economic and social agenda focuses on three priorities: social inclusion, public safety, and the promotion of private investment. Promoting social inclusion implies the implementation of specific policies to target the different factors of discrimination and exclusion affecting the most vulnerable sectors of our society, namely the rural population, the native and indigenous communities, the Afro-Peruvian minorities, women, children, and the elderly. It should be noted that the rural population was the main victim of violence during the 80s and 90s. According to the Truth and National Reconciliation Commission, from a total of reported victims, 79% lived in rural areas and 56% were occupied in agricultural activities. The tragedy suffered by the Andean and jungle populations, the Quechuas and the Xanincas communities living in rural and poor areas, was not perceived or assumed as their own by the rest of the country. This reveals attitudes of contempt still remaining in Peruvian society, which the new government considered necessary to change. This is a true and comprehensive meaning of social inclusion. The Humala administration seeks to strengthen citizen participation in decision-making and in the exercise of power, to fight against corruption, and to promote unrestricted respect and full exercise of human rights among all Peruvians. For our government, the promotion of universal protection of human rights, including civil, political, economic, social, and cultural rights, is fundamental for the functioning of a democratic society in Peru. The democratic commitment assumed by President Humala unambiguously states that he will respect human rights for all, and that he will not allow any kind of political influence in the investigations and violations of those rights currently underway or in the ones that will be open in the future. This commitment to promote and defend human rights has begun to materialize in various measures, such as the enactment of the Prior Consultation Law in favor of native and indigenous communities. Regarding public safety, President Humala is committed to solving issues of crime that affect large cities and rural areas, including, of course, drug trafficking. In terms of promotion of private investment, the President recognizes the importance of foreign investment towards achieving his goals. Therefore, his policy welcomes all investment that meet current guidelines, such as respect for indigenous populations, labor rights, and environmental regulations, with the aim to provide a stable scenario for all investors and honor an international legally binding instrument on indigenous and tribal peoples adopted by the International Labor Organization, such as Convention 169. We recently approved a provision for previous consultation with indigenous communities, which will potentially foster stronger investor-community relations, thereby minimizing the possibility of existence of social conflicts. As I already mentioned, in this India war, my country and the United States are clearly aligned. Working as partners in Latin America, we have to strive to enjoy strong, positive, and diversified cooperative relations. Economic and commercial ties have deepened with the 2009 implementation of the United States-Peru Free Trade Agreement. United States investment in Peru has grown substantially in recent years as has two-way trade. The United States is one of Peru's largest foreign investors and trade partners. More than 400,000 United States citizens visit Peru annually for business, tourism, or study. Peru is a participant in efforts to negotiate a regional trade agreement under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which also includes the United States. On the security side of our relations, in order to further strengthen its democracy, reduce illegal coca cultivation, and promote social inclusive market-based economic growth, Peru has committed to broaden economic opportunities and increase the state presence in areas susceptible to the influence and control of narco-traffickers, including the valley of the rivers Apurimac, Ene, and Mantaro. The United States assistance promotes these objectives through bilateral programs that support Peru's anti-narcotics and alternative development efforts, increase social and economic inclusion, improve governance, and sound environmental stewardship. Peru and the United States cooperate on efforts to limit the production and exportation of narcotics. Bilateral programs include manual eradication of illicit coca cultivation, aviation support for eradication and interdiction operations, and technical assistance and equipment for the Peruvian National Police and our customs agency. The United States also provides funding to build the capacity of judicial actors. These U.S. government-supported law enforcement efforts complement an aggressive effort to establish an alternative development program for coca farmers in key coca-growing areas to voluntarily reduce and eliminate illicit coca cultivation. In this regard, I would like to underline the outstanding results jointly obtained by at the San Martin Miracle. San Martin is a region of in the northern jungle of Peru where an integrated approach that involves economic, governmental, and security issues transformed this part of Peru through a successful alternative development program financially and technically supported by the United States government. Has managed to generate millions of dollars in legitimate revenue from cacao and coffee production, and that have cut extreme poverty significantly. This is a substantive success that will be replicated in other areas, but also beyond the limits of the hemisphere in Afghanistan and in other parts of Asia. Peru and the United States have also embarked on a more strategic approach regarding defense and security. On March 28, 2012, ICE had the privilege to sign a memorandum of understanding with the United States government for further political and military cooperation. This is a large step in the bilateral relationship of both nations. It is, in fact, a very important step forward in the right direction. This non-binding political-military memorandum of understanding culminated after 2 years of negotiations. It's a political message of our common will to engage in discussions on a whole range of issues, not only drug trafficking and organized crime, but nuclear proliferation, humanitarian relief, military training, capacity building, human rights, and so on. This memorandum institutionalizes a biennial political-military dialogue between the United States and Peru, broadens and strengthens bilateral cooperation on political-military issues, and helps achieve the two countries' shared security-related objectives. We believe that Peru has a key role to play in the security of the Southern Pacific. For the time being, the closest partners have been Chile and Colombia, but our country has proven to be a reliable partner that shares the same objectives and principles as the United States when it comes to joining forces against the scoundrel of terrorism, international crime, nuclear proliferation, and the disgraces derived from natural disasters. We are ready to cooperate with the United States in that regard. Within this framework, our two countries have put on the bilateral agenda the negotiation of a new defense cooperation agreement, the original of which will be given to me in the next few days. And that agreement will update and replace the one we signed back in the 50s. The new challenges and opportunities to work cooperatively and are enormous, and we're quite confident that we can pursue a new kind of relation, a more strategic one, as partners in the Pacific. But there is another aspect in our common foreign policy projection and vision as part of the Western Hemisphere that further unites Peru and the United States, and that is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, also known as TPP. Peru's participation in the TPP, as well as in the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum, is part of the foreign policy strategy to strengthen and deepen economic and political ties with the Asia-Pacific region, which comprises many of the most dynamic economies in the world and is increasing its importance as a forthcoming international trade and economic growth hub. In this sense, TPP allows Peru easy access to the region, to this region, and that accounts for nearly 60% of global GDP international, 48% of international trade, and a third of the planet's population. The negotiations toward this agreement are part of a process of economic liberalizations initiated by Peru more than two decades ago in order to consolidate its integration to the world economy, to create more trade and investment opportunities, and to attain economic development. From a trade perspective, the current TPP participants concentrated in the last year more than 21% of Peru's total exports, exceeding by 33% 2010's figures and represented 24% of Peru's import. As well, TPP countries offer a diversified market for our exports and account for about 62.3% of foreign investment made by the region as a whole. The inclusion of Mexico and Canada opens new opportunities. Once completed, the TPP agreement will join the network of free trade agreements signed by Peru in the last years, and this will also allow us to have a stable and secure trade environment with countries like Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, Brunei, and Vietnam, countries with whom Peru does not have a bilateral agreement. Trans-Pacific Partnership and integration of 11 countries, including Peru, Chile, Canada, the United States, Malaysia, Vietnam, Brunei, Singapore, New Zealand, and Australia, aims to build a high standard agreement to support economic growth. And hopefully the treaty will be signed early next year. So development is there, and the creation of jobs within the members' countries. The agreement will also include aspects that go beyond the traditional tariff reduction. And because of the strategic position of Utah geographically, this state has a lot of economic and trade potential with TPP countries. TPP promotes trade facilitation and investment, including the promotion of value chains and development commitments, the creation of new mechanisms to increase services and support small and medium enterprises, promotes competitiveness and regulatory consistency, and improves labor, environmental, and intellectual property standards. Peru acknowledges that the greatest significance of the agreement lies in its potential to bring more Asia-Pacific countries. For instance, Canada and Mexico will officially join the negotiation this coming December, and we believe that new applications will come. The Asia-Pacific will increase its strategic importance, and therefore, to be in this platform will allow Peru to establish a vital level of cooperation for its stability and prosperity. Moreover, it should be noted that the TPP economies comprises the two economic blocs, Asia and Latin America, that have better coped the international financial crisis, which began in 2008. The agreement will gather together a large number of members from both sides of the Pacific under a single free trade agreement. The result of this will be important, as it will mean that the member countries will be subject to similar mutually agreed rules. The adoption of common procedures and frameworks will help to solve the spaghetti bowl problem that the business community currently faces and will improve the competitiveness of our businesses. Our government has adopted a state policy that the development of social inclusion measures in order to spread the benefits of economic growth and international trade to all sectors of the population, especially, of course, the most vulnerable ones. Peru expects that the negotiation process allows building an inclusive, high-standard agreement in order to achieve economic growth, development, and creates employment in member countries, given the virtual paralysis of the Doha round at the multilateral level. This is the only means available to continue pursuing free trade in one of the most dynamic regions in the world. In this sense, we have submitted a proposal outlining elements to be considered under the theme of development, and in this regard called for incorporating provisions in the agreement. One, integration of women in the business opportunities arising from the agreement. Two, technology transfer and improvement and mobility of human resources. Three, importance of corporate social responsibility. Four, promotion of productive activities related to trade in areas of extreme poverty. And five, promotion of investment in infrastructure to trade, especially focusing on rural areas, access to international markets too. And we have a great interest in protecting genetic resources and traditional knowledge. Allow me to end this presentation with another element that further supports the role of Peru as a strategic partner of the United States in the Asia-Pacific that is related to the synergies among the United States, Latin America, and China. As a former ambassador to China, and in my current position as Peru's ambassador to the United States, I have identified elements of this so-called triangular relationship that I feel are worth mentioning. I'd like to take the opportunity today to share some ideas with you. The United States has played a highly influential role in Latin American affairs for many decades. But China, over the course of only a few years, has become an increasing and even equal importance in the region in certain aspects. And at the very least, China's presence is generally viewed throughout the region as a welcome alternative to U.S. presence. China's strongest trade relationships are with commodity producers in the region, such as Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Peru, and Colombia. And here we believe that our country can play a constructive role. Peru remains committed to a strong diplomatic and economic relationship with the United States. And at the same time, Peru's other relationships are of growing relevance. Relations with China, now the largest consumer of Peruvian exports, are carrying increasing weight in Peru. Despite a clear shift from United States-dominated to increasingly multilateral influence in Latin America, Chinese involvement in the region is by no means a zero-sum game. The United States State Department has clearly expressed support for China's presence in the region, insisting that China is not perceived to be eating America's lunch. There remains, however, much discussion within the beltway of China's grab for regional resources. Peru has a large historical relation with China, with bonds that come from mid-19th century, when landowners in Peru lacked manpower for their fields and saw Asian workers as a solution to their problem. Chinese people have lived in Peru for more than 160 years now and are the largest minority ethnic group, comprising approximately 8% of the Peruvian population. As a result of significant Chinese influence, Peru now boasts a unique fusion of cultures. The Chinese continues to own and operate around 3,500 chifas, a term in Spanish for Chinese restaurants. Migration-related ties have generated a certain degree of appreciation among Peruvians for Chinese language, food, and culture. Our free trade agreement and booming trade with China are significantly expanding bilateral contacts. A full 38% of China's total regional investment is expected to be directed toward Peru this year, up from just 0.6% in 2010. China-Peru trade, investment, and cooperation opportunities are clearly abundant. Should Chinese growth slow considerably, Peru would certainly feel a considerable impact, especially as a result of declining metal prices, which represents 60% of Peruvian exports. And Chinese growth is, of course, slowing as we speak, in response to central government measures to control inflation, though not at alarming rates. The Humala administration looks to expand cooperation with China in economic, commercial, political investment, and tourism-related areas. And in an effort to decrease Peru's dependence on primary goods exports, Peru is seeking to expand production of higher value-added goods. The implementation of the Peruvian initiative of the Alliance of the Pacific, I can tell you a few things about it later, composed of Peru, Mexico, Colombia, and Chile, also gives our country some competitive advantages. Peru is well-fitted to play a role to undertake the necessary steps toward this triangular cooperation. Thank you so much.
Okay. We will now use the remainder of the time for questions. So if you have a question, please state your name and a little bit about yourself. Does anyone have a question?
Hi, my name is Ryan. I actually just got back from an international internship through the Hinckley Institute in Peru, in Cusco.
Internship where, sorry?
In Cusco, in Peru.
Cusco, okay.
Yeah, I lived there for 7 months. Mm-hmm. And I actually have a question. It's regarding what I wrote my paper about. So mining right now in Peru is a very controversial issue. It has been introduced under President Fujimori in 1990 under deregulation standards to, in turn, for neoliberal policies to attract mining, which Peru has now sold over 90% of mining commissions. And there's a growing unrest in the country that's been rising through, let's say, primarily through the Minas Congo. What is Ollanta's current stance right now on how to kind of reconcile these issues, where he promised to kind of put the country before mining interest? I am kind of interested to see where he will go after the first year that's been a bit turbulent, that's carried over from Alan Garcia. If you could kind of guide my question from there, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I just had a meeting this morning with the mining sector here in Utah, and we were speaking precisely about that issue. We have a historic problem in Peru, and if you've been to Cusco in the last few months, you probably are able to understand it clearly. There is a long tradition of nervous and conflicted relations between Lima and the rest of the country. And that was, to some extent, kept quiet for many decades until growth began. And the country's economic prestige was recognized all over the world. So that has created a problem of timing. The national government, but not only this, this President Humala has been in power only for a year or so, but all these democratic elected governments have not had the chance to run at the same speed. And this type of historical problem between the center, which is Lima, the capital, with probably 8 million inhabitants, with the rest of the country, is still there. And that has triggered several very serious conflicts in the province. One of them is directly related with the mining exploitation, because the communities and the governments, because now they have legally elected governments too, which has to be respected and deserve respect, are very conscious of the implications related to the environment of these tremendous investments in the mining sectors. And the case of Conga is specific. And at the same time, they worry, and they probably have good reasons to be worried about how the distribution of this wealth will go. What is going to happen with them? So in the case of Conga, we cannot deny that. There is a strong support for a tough attitude against that particular investment from the population. And that has created a serious problem for the government, so the project is on hold, and we will see what happens. In relation to other very profitable investments in the rest of the country, we don't have that particular problem now. There is an important investment of a Chinese mining company in Piura, and that's also been paralyzed. But it has been like that for several years. So we don't really know how these things are going to evolve in the future. But the approach that President Humala is taking is very constructive. We will need patience. The problem is very serious. 70% of the population of Cajamarca is very much against the project. But we all know that there will come a time in which the investment will have to be made somehow.
I'm Angelina Kump. I'm a social studies major here at the U. You talked about the TPP. Maybe I missed it, but could you explain what that is a little more?
Okay. several years ago, a few countries, members of the APEC, you probably know what APEC is, that's a structure, international structures in the Asia-Pacific, and the heads of state meet once a year in different countries. They just met last week in Vladivostok, Russia, and that was the only occasion in which President Obama did not attend because of the Democratic Convention. And so this APEC structure is very active in the world. Well, a few countries within the framework of APEC began speaking slowly a few years ago about creating a free trade agreement of their own. And these countries are Chile, Peru, and the United States in terms of the Americas. Then countries like, I think I mentioned them, Malaysia, Brunei, Singapore, Vietnam, New Zealand, and Australia join the original conversations, and just 2 months ago, Mexico and Canada formally requested their admission to the process. And I'm speaking about a process because we have not a treaty yet, and the process is very complex. So this is called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a tremendous, it's a massive alternative for world trade. We're going to be 11 countries soon, and negotiators from our countries meet all the time. Right now they're finishing their last meeting in Virginia. And they have met in Peru, in Chile, in New Zealand, Australia, everywhere, every month, in order to advance the agreement that will have to be signed by our governments probably around March next year. There are serious problems still pending, but we will find an agreement. We really believe in that. The interesting thing is that this so-called TPP will mean that our region, that these 11 members, will structure an international economic zone of free trade, which will be much larger in terms of amount of product, much larger than that of the European Union. So we are ready to assist at the beginning of something totally new, that we will be part of a very powerful international structure telling us that the power is moving to the east and that we understand the message. And as I told you before, that's an interesting challenge for Utah too, because Utah is to some extent close to the Pacific Rim. And for you, future members of, for instance, Utah's private sector, will have an interesting challenge a whole bunch of opportunities. Does it answer your question? Okay.
Okay. My name is Mauricio Lopez. It's a pleasure to have you here. Es un gusto tenerlo aquí.
Encantado.
Okay. So my question relates to innovation and technology. As we know, today, innovation is a major factor for economic growth. However, Peru still ranks 75 in the world. What do you think it needs to be done in order to improve and encourage innovation?
Well, innovation is considered, and this concept of the of the Trans-Pacific Partnership too. And of course, there is a great challenge, but innovation is very much related to education. I'm not really an expert on that matter, but Peruvian universities are improving a lot, and there is a tremendous effort in the field of research of science and technology. And the Peruvian private sector has been very creative in the last few years, and that is reflected in the impressive growth that we register. In the last year, it was 7.8%, and for this year, the calculation take us to 6%, and that puts Peru among probably the two or three countries with the most impressive growth of GDP in the world. Of course, we cannot deny where 60% of our exports are related to the mining sector. So we have a big challenge. We have to modify that trend, and we have to join the new options that the world is creating and are relating to that you're mentioning. For instance, chain of productions, outsourcing, and so many other things. We are in that process.
My name is Pamela Portocarrero, and I'm actually originally from Lima, Peru. I'm a student here at the U, a junior studying political science and international studies. And my question was, there's known issues of discrimination in Peru, especially between the indigenous people and those that are mostly from the capital, from Lima, or from European descent. My question was, what is President Humala's stance on that in bridging the divide between the indigenous people and those that live in Lima, live in the capital? And if there are any measures being taken to kind of, one, bridge that gap, and two, empower those indigenous people to kind of come out of that poverty and come out of the situation and the environment in which they're living so they can become better and they can improve their standards of living and of education?
Well, I think that's an extremely complex question. But what I can tell you is that the process began 500 years ago with the Spanish conquest of our territory. And later on with the foundation of the Republic. We're still in that process to create a national identity for our country. We had indigenous population, then the Spanish came, and then we had, and we still have, several other groups of population. We're kind of a multi-ethnic and multicultural society. The process of integrating these differences in a kind of melting pot is still there. And to some extent, that is working. Poverty affects the process seriously. Inequality also affects it. But law is also there, and democracy is also there. Opportunities are beginning to expand. And hopefully, we will speed up this process as we conquer more successes with democracy and promotion and respect of human rights.
My name is Michelle Fest, and I'm a political science major. I'm a junior. And my question is, what has your previous experiences as being the ambassador to China helped with your work in Peru? Since you guys are getting more relations with China, how has that helped improve it or helped the efficiency of working together with the Chinese?
It hasn't been that difficult because, as I told you, the immigration of Chinese people began in the around 852. Yeah, 1852, 19th century, yes. And because of that, there is a reality. Around 8% of Peruvian population has some degree, some level of Chinese blood in their veins. And that means a lot. There is a social respect for Chinese culture in our country and also for Japanese culture. And because of that, the Chinese people also know it. We eat Chinese food a lot in Peru. We have always done that. And to some extent, to the extent that we consider that part of our national culture. So it wasn't hard. When the Chinese decided to open their market, to open their society, to open their vision to the future and began to invest in Peru, that investment was generally well received. And it's still there. So until we developed a strategic alliance, which culminated in a free trade agreement, which I had the honor to sign a few years ago. And that free trade agreement is working well. So let's see what happens in the future. But as I told you, we shouldn't see China's relation or involvement in Latin America as a competence to the United States. It's not that they are eating America's lunch. We are together in this bondage, in this triangular bondage, which I mentioned before, Latin America, United States, and China.
Any additional questions?
Hello, I'm Ivan Ottaviano, and I'm a political science major here also. So as we mentioned, in the 80s and the 90s, neoliberal policies were established in all over Latin America in order to deal with the debt crisis. This was established so that more foreign investment would come into the countries and therefore more revenue could be formed. However, this really undermined the poverty rates in Latin America because local economies could not compete with the power and resources of multinational corporations. So my question is, what is the new administration, what measures are they taking to make sure that local economies are protected and while at the same time promoting free trade?
Well, that was the case of many Latin American countries. The crisis of the external debt was so huge back in the 80s that affected democracy, that affected human rights. In the case of my country in particular, the debt crisis and the economic crisis of the 80s was extremely costly for us in every sense. Finally, we had to understand that we needed fiscal austerity, that we needed sound economic policies, which were finally implemented, not only by us, but by many other Latin American countries with impressive success. I'm talking about the macroeconomic concept. And that was the case of Chile, of course, of countries like Uruguay, like Brazil, like Mexico, like Peru. We have been successful in that, like Costa Rica, for instance. The case is that, of course, controlling the numbers is not enough. But we have been successful in reducing poverty. We have been successful in reducing inequality. And let's see what happens in the future. We cannot abandon our tight austerity measures and sound political fiscal policy. But at the same time, we have to add to the model, and we're kind of succeeding in that, though slowly, a social content, a social emotion. And that is the meaning of President Humala in power.
My name is Anna Solomon, and I'm an international studies major. And I spent some time in the rainforest near Iquitos, Peru, a couple summers ago. And I've just been curious ever since. I know a big concern was the deforestation of the rainforest, and I've always been curious as to what, I guess, the government or organizations, how they're addressing that, and if it's affiliated at all with the United States, or just kind of what's your stance on that?
Well, I'm not an expert in that particular matter, but there are important institutions of the United States very much involved in that. And one of them is run with former Secretary of Interior and former Governor of Arizona, Bruce Babbitt. And I personally spoke to him about that a few days ago. He travels to that region often and is very much involved in that process with a very important organization. I know that there are very tough laws in order to protect the environment in that part of the country because we consider that that's an important a potential reserve for the future, not only of Peru, but for mankind. And we have a duty to protect it. And we are kind of duly obliged by the United Nations also. And at the same time, there is a Minister for Environment, very active in Peru, and particularly in that specific area. I'm not an expert, of course, in protection of the rainforest or things like that. But I know that serious steps have been taken.
Hello. My name is Jacob. I'm in the Masters of International Affairs and Global Enterprise program here at the U. In regards to the Trans-Pacific Partnership,
yes,
there's been a number of economists that have called for capital controls to be incorporated into that agreement. I was just wondering what the current Peruvian administration's view is on maintaining some control of pot capital coming in and out.
Well, let me tell you that your question is very, very technical. I might not be able to give you a precise answer on that. But that particular issue of not only these controls for national economies within the framework of the TPP as a whole, but also other pressing issues like, for instance, intellectual property, which is very serious, are being precisely discussed monthly by delegates of the nine countries. And as I told you, Mexico and Canada will also join the process. So there will be 11 countries. One of the problems is precisely that. But as I also said, there will be a solution in the short term. And I'm confident that the treaty will be signed perhaps in March or April. Thank you.
Thank you guys for all of your questions. Those were great. And please join me in thanking Ambassador Forsyth for his excellent and informative forum today.
Thank you. Thank you.